Rashmi Nair with you as we go over the budget bullet points. Finance Minister, Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland tabling the 2023 federal budget, and it is just in time for our smart speakers to weigh in. Joining us today, we have Jamie Ellerton, founding partner at Canaptus, longtime political strategist, and Karen Stintz, former city councilor and TTC chair, now the president and CEO of Variety Village. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
How are you guys doing today? Enjoying the sunshine out there?
Any day at this time of year where we see blue skies, a day that puts a smile on my face.
Okay, good, good. There is a lot of depressing news out there, so it's important for us to find reasons to smile. And if the sunshine's all we have, at least we have the sunshine. But if you are both comfortable going over what we're seeing in the budget, I can put some points to you here. Out of we do know that there's the grocery rebate. We do know about the healthcare spending. I think one of the highlights here is our deficit going from a projected $30.6 billion to $40.1 billion next year. Let's offset that bad news with that planned 6% tax hike on alcohol only going down to 2% now. Starting April 1st, you're going to pay 2% more on taxes for booze. What do you think is the main focus here, Jamie? And are you happy with what you're hearing from Chrystia Freeland so far?
I think the main focus is that they don't really have a focus. This government, it continues to kind of grapple, I think, with really strong economic headwinds and what we're seeing on the inflationary side. They obviously, this is a payment for groceries is something that's going to be appreciated by families who are really struggling to make ends meet right now. But I think if you ask the same families if $500 is going to make or break their year, the answer is going to be no, it's not enough, and that we need to see more action. And so I think when you look at kind of what Minister Freeland presented today, this is a budget that's trying to talk about a lot, but not really doing much in substantial. Like, if they want to not make problems worse, how about you don't raise the rates, tax rates on alcohol for April 1st, as opposed to just cutting it from 6% to 2%. So that's still going to be an increase. That's still going to be inflationary pressures. That means anyone going to your local bar still has to have higher prices that they're going to have to pass on to you, the consumer. So I don't really think there's much news here. I think the fact that for all the forecasting we heard that this was going to be something resembling fiscal conservatism and that they get it, they know they can't keep spending. The fact that the deficit's still going up and they have no real plan to ever get this back to balance means that inflation is going to continue to be a problem much longer than the Bank of Canada and everyone else hopes it would be.
Okay, but the deficit's being raised probably because we're not getting 6% on alcohol, right? I mean, we need some sort of a revenue stream.
I don't think the beer tax that we're talking about is actually what's going to make up that additional $20 billion. I think what's making that deficit higher is out of control spending with a bloated public service. They're spending, they've been spending more on consultants. That was one of the things they tried to say. They're going to spend a few million less over the next 5 years on consultants while already spending at an all-time high on them. This government is not actually running the government. They're going through the motions and looking for a pat on the back, and there's no plan for the country. There's no plan for the finances. And I think the problem's only going to get worse.
Karen, we know $13 billion promised over 5 years for the dental care expansion. Anything standing out to you in this budget?
Yeah, but that was basically the payment that was required to the NDP in order for them to continue to prop up the Liberal government. So they knew they were going to have to come to terms with that. And here's where it is being unveiled. You know, I think part of what the frustration is, you know, particularly around that food credit or the food subsidy back to low-income families, is that the government is still failing to fix the issues that are causing our food prices to be really high, which is the fact we have monopolies in certain areas of food distribution, such as dairy, egg, milk, bread. So it's just, if they were really serious about fixing food pricing in Canada, they would actually start with getting rid of the monopolies and not just papering over the fact that some people, low-income people, are now being hit in a very negative way by the fact that we pay more for food. And in terms of the alcohol, again, it's not that 2% is not going to fix the budgetary situation and the amount of money they've been spending, increasing staff, increasing outsourcing, you know, not being able to collect on those payments, those CERB payments that were erroneously sent out. So there's just, it is a government that is not doesn't have a clear strategic direction, and this budget demonstrates that, and the fact that they're not actually fixing the core issues that would help bring more fiscal sustainability. And if they were really serious about it, then they would actually have to have difficult conversations about raising the HST by 1% in order to get the money that they're going to need to wipe out this deficit.
What about the clean tech investments? Brett House, our economist, I thought we were getting ahead of it, but he pointed out that the Biden administration brought in some really great initiatives last year. So it seems like we're lagging behind on clean tech initiatives. But do you support where the federal government's going with this, Jamie?
I think this is, remains to be seen as this, whether or not this is going to pay off. I would look at the reality is Canada actually has a lot of the critical minerals that are crazy in demand. And so that would beg the question, why do we need subsidies for these? How about the government just streamlines the approval process? These mines can be opened up faster and we can get more product and sell it to market. Not only will that create more economic activity, of which the profits will be taxed, it'll create more jobs and help get us to that green transition that this government is so fond of talking about. I think if you look at what the Biden administration's done, Canada will never be able to match the billions for billions that the Americans are looking to do. So we have to look to create a more competitive economy that has and uses our natural built-in advantages, as opposed to thinking an Ottawa knows best solution is what's going to be the answer.
Yeah, I mean, clean tech is being supported by the Ford government here too, right? In Ontario, building EV batteries is a priority. On a federal level, we're looking at tax credits to build the supply of green energy and also for investment in clean technology manufacturing. Karen, are we going in the right direction?
Well, you know, it's one of these things we're going to have to invest in it. And the reality is, well, I shouldn't say the reality is, but what we are coming to understand is that, you know, the production and distribution of batteries is not yet economically viable without subsidy. And, you know, even the big companies and Tesla don't turn a profit on their electric cars. So we're making this investment in the hopes that at some point this green technology will actually also be financially stable, sustainable, but we're not there yet.
All right, let's move on, if you're both budgeted out with the federal budget. We were talking about Canada's bail system and whether it's effective. It was a really fascinating conversation just before we launched our Smart Speaker series with Anthony Dube, a professor emeritus at U of T Center for Criminology and Sociolegal Studies. He flagged that one of the biggest issues is, well, a lot of people are out on bail, but it's because they're presumed innocent. But we have seen a doubling in the amount of people imprisoned awaiting trial, 44%. And this is a national percentage here. Jamie, where do we begin on improving our judicial system so we can keep our streets safer?
I think it starts with having an honest conversation as to what is going on. I think there's one thing for the macro stats. There's another to kind of look at. We look at the murder that just took place on the TTC Kiel station on Saturday night. We know from the reporting that this was a person who had a previous rap sheet and was out back into the community rather than behind bars. So you can never look at the entire system and blame a particular politician for a one-off incident. But I think when you look at the increasing crime that people are feeling and the safety and the anxiety that people are genuinely feeling out and about in the city today, I think bail reform has to be something that is put on the table. What is working? What is not? What are the types of crimes that people are committing and they're getting put back onto the streets? If you're a first-time offender and the bail system says, hey, yeah, sure, fine, you can have your bail. If you're a repeat offender, why are those people going back out of the streets? We already know that they've committed crimes. So why are they being put back out? I think when you hear the anxiety when you talk to people in the street in the city right now, and by broader extension across the country, they're not looking for philosophical debates. They're looking for safety and they're looking for leadership on this.
Yeah, and we need to have that conversation about keeping someone in custody waiting for their trial. Seems punitive. It seems like a punishment. Karen, we're going to take a break for traffic, but I do want to get your thoughts on bail reform, but also just like, how do we improve the system overall? That discussion coming up on the other side of the break. This is the Smart Speaker series on The Rush, News Talk 1010 Toronto. And it is our Smart Series, continuing with Smart Speaker Series, continuing with Jamie Ellerton, founding partner at Kanaptus, longtime political strategist, Karen Stintz, former city councillor and TTC chair, now the president and CEO of Variety Village. And we just ended that first segment talking about bail reform, how we can improve the system. And we had Jamie's thoughts on it. Karen, we were talking with a professor emeritus at U of T who studies criminology and sociolegal studies, saying that we are holding more people in prison awaiting trial than just a few years ago, going from 20-something percent to 44% now. But still, people talk about bail reform as though too many people are out on the streets who shouldn't be. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I think you talked about the whole concept of being, you know, innocent until you're presumed innocent until proven guilty, which means that if you incarcerate someone before a verdict is reached, then you are technically holding them and assuming that they're guilty. The challenge is that presumption gets tested every single time someone's a repeat offender or a violent offender or has demonstrated a history of behavior that it would lead one to be concerned about public safety. And the amount of repeat offenders in the system would indicate that our jails are not places where rehabilitation is happening, but where criminals are learning, convicted individuals are learning how to become lifelong criminals. And that's certainly something that is destined to keep us in the cycle, which if we're going to start looking at anything, it would be that. And, again, these high-profile cases where these violent offenders have a history of violence and are let out on bail because we're trying to achieve another social objective just causes people to become cynical about the entire system.
Mm-hmm. And so part of it is, you know, holding someone while they wait for their trial is punitive already, as you're saying, Karen. And some of that is people are waiting a long time for their trial.
They're waiting
right?
a long time. That's the other piece of it. Is
yeah.
The cases take so long to get to court, and a verdict takes so long to get delivered that, you know, you could have a person being held in jail for years without actually having a verdict against them. And then their sentence is reduced because they've actually served the time.
Or you can have them out on bail for just as long, right? And they're not facing the justice that they've been accused of having to face. Jamie, yeah. Where do you see efforts to improve? I mean, where would you think we should focus our efforts?
Yes, I think on bail reform, I think you definitely need to look at how the system's working and fix what's broken. I think if the parole board or the bail system, sorry, is regularly putting repeat violent offenders back out on the streets and not keeping them behind bars after they commit offenses again, then I think Parliament needs to take legislative reform to make that to be against the law so that the bail system no longer has that option. I think you and Karen just touched on a really important point. It takes forever to get justice in this country. The system crawls. It operates with very little digital technology, notwithstanding the fact they were all forced to learn how to use Zoom in 2020, and that there's this very serious needs to expedite the system. That works both ways. It means those who are found not guilty get to move on with their lives sooner, and those that are found guilty get the justice. We've seen cases that gets thrown out because it's taken too long and there's effectively a miscarriage of justice. So mm-hmm. I think the whole system needs to be reformed. I think when it's like less easy solution and more of like, we actually need to fund the core necessities of our justice system so that the thing actually works, I think you'd find broad support across the political spectrum for such an initiative.
I was going to ask, do you think there is public interest in adding more money to the issue? Because that means hiring trial judges. That means hiring correctional staff as well if we're going to have more prisons. Karen?
Well, you know, again, I don't know that we need to build more prisons. We certainly do need to expedite the speed of justice. And again, also understand that if our objective is to rehabilitate people that have been convicted, so that they don't reoffend, we're failing in that regard as well. And so there's a number of failure points in the system that need to be addressed, and all of them complicated and all of them costly.
Okay, I'm going to put this out to you. The Premier commenting today, telling everyone in the mayoral election on June 26th, he thinks you shouldn't vote for a certain kind of candidate. Have a listen.
And the mayoral candidates that say they want to cut funding for the police, they want to defund the police, don't vote for them. Simple as that. Support the candidates that are going to fund the police. You're going to get more police officers in our subways, in our streets, because, again, I've never seen it this bad ever, absolutely ever. And we need to make sure when we sentence these criminals, they need to go away for a long time without bail.
Karen, as a former politician, your thoughts on the comments from the premier?
Well, I think that the premier is really just putting a plug out for Mark Saunders. And so I think that's pretty clear. And, you know, again, I don't know why he would make those comments because, you know, certainly the candidates that have been declared, I don't think any of them have voted to defund the police. And so it's a bit curious where that comment's coming from.
Jamie,
I don't know Josh Mallow's record, but I mean, who is, you know, there's been, you know, Brad has voted 5 times to increase police funding, and I don't believe Anna's voted to decrease police funding. So I'm not really sure who those comments are directed to.
No, absolutely. I think there are about 5 councillors who have the ear of activists who will push for it, but I haven't seen a councillor vote to defund police or even bring that up in a discussion. Brad Bradford did vote to cut TTC funding, though. Jamie, I mean, I would rather hear from someone who wants to add money to the TTC, not police, but your thoughts on what the premier said today on how we should vote in Toronto.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like awkward for the premier 2 weeks ago to say he's going to stay out of this and today so prominently look to step right into it. In a way, I think he definitely is looking to support his former candidate, Don Valley West, who's now running for mayor in Mark Saunders. Full disclosure, like I will be supporting Brad Bradford and helping out on his campaign. And so I think when you look kind of where the state of the city's at, I think this upcoming municipal election is going to be an opportunity for Toronto to look at the kind of city we live in and the kind of city we want going forward. I think when you look at the constant talk that happens at City Hall with so little getting done, I think people are looking for real solutions and real answers. And I think uniquely, politically speaking, the fact that this is just a mayoral election, there's no other elections going on, I can really focus a citywide conversation. I hope it inspires a vigorous and fulsome debate for real solutions that'll lead to real action at City Hall.
Absolutely agree with you. The more the merrier, I say. And that goes for our Smart Speaker series. Thank you both so much for making time for us today. Jamie Ellerton, Karen Stintz, wishing you both a lovely Tuesday afternoon.
Thank you. You as well.
Thanks, Rosemary.
Thank you. That is our Smart Speaker series. Jamie Ellerton, founding partner at Kanaptus, longtime political strategist. Karen Stintz, former city councillor, TTC chair, now the president and chief executive officer of Variety Village. Lots to weigh in on and lots to discuss. We'll go through the key takeaways of the federal budget coming up on the other side. And we have lots more to talk about here. Are you aware of what foreign influence could mean? It's a trick question because it seems like everyone has a different definition. We'll get into that as well coming up right here on The Rush, News Talk 1010 Toronto.